Welcome to Bob Nuts, a Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 254, Geographic Scope. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. This is our live call-in show for Computer Repair Tech. We answer your questions on running your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at ninjarmm.com/10off. That is the number 10off. All right, let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. John, how you doing?
Locked and loaded, ready to launch.
Awesome. And next to him, we have Brad Torrey from TTCS Computer Services. How you doing, Brad?
Doing great. Glad to be back again.
Awesome to have you, as always. So let's go ahead and start off the show, and I'm going to throw it to you, Brad. What do you have as far as a tip or story that we could learn from?
I got a twofer. I'm going to try to tell a quick story that leads into a tip.
Awesome.
So it was August 24th, my friends, and in Southern California, it was the hottest day of the year. I think. I'm not 100% sure if it was actually the hottest day of the year, but it was about 105. Coastal, like not inland. Where we live, we don't see 105. That doesn't happen. Luckily, it was a little bit dry, but it was still hot. And on that particular day, my office is in my garage, and I have a network closet this morning, like in the middle of the house. So I have one Cat 6 that I, like 7 years ago, actually it was Cat 5 at the time, ran around up through the attic, around to the garage and down. And I didn't really know anything about cable runs at the time. And so I didn't secure it as well as I probably could have and probably damaged it, et cetera. Anyway, it failed. Somewhere in the middle there died. I don't know where, but it wasn't the ends. I re-terminated the ends. It goes to a patch panel. I moved it over to a different port and just dead. So actually it would come up and down. The link light would come off and on and on. But the point is, I haven't migrated up to AWS like I planned on, but I have my Screen Connect server is in my office. My main desktop is here in my office. My bench computer is in my office. I have a Wi-Fi access point in here that does all the Wi-Fi for this end of the house. This is a very important cable and cannot go down. So I have determined now that on the hottest day of the year, I get to climb up into my attic.
Oh.
Luckily, like the last time I did it, I didn't have pull sticks, whatever. This was a long time ago. Now I've got pull sticks. I've done a lot of cable running. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be, but still sucked. I spent probably 45 minutes up in my attic and it was really hot. So I like froze towels in my freezer so that I could come down and like cool myself off and stuff. Anyway, the tip, because that was a horrible time to have to do that, but I didn't have a choice. The tip is, if you're going to do your own work, make sure you do it right. Or if you're going to do work for friends, make sure you do it right. Don't, because it's a favor or because you're not getting paid because it's your own business, do it like a pro, like you would for someone else, so that these kind of things don't happen to bite you in the back. And then I think the other thing is, do these things for the first time for yourself and make all the mistakes for yourself and then learn from them. So I learned a lot the first time I ran it, and I learned a little bit from the failure. So, you know, good. It was kind of like my lab experience on training self time, you know, a long time ago. And so I'm glad that I did that then and not for a customer that this would have happened. So.
Absolutely. Very good. So it's funny you say that, because I had a friend at work come to me and say, hey, I want to run all these Cat 5e or Cat 6 cables throughout the house. What do you recommend? Cable manufacturer. So I went up and looked up a couple things for him. And then we got to talking. Now he has actually cut out drywall throughout his house to actually run these cables properly through everything, which I was like, he's showing me pictures. I'm like, wow. So we're talking about the amount of cables. And I'm like, well, if you're going to run them, I would run a minimum of 3. And he said, well, I'm going to run 4. And then we're going to run a coaxial cable alongside that and split everything off. I said, perfect. And the reason for doing that, a lot of people don't think about this, especially in pre-construction. I'm sure you did, John, is that if you have different cables coming into one room, if one does go bad or gets cut or something happens to it and it goes down, you've at least got others in the room that you can plug into. that's the number one important thing, is to have multiple cables so that you're not ever down for more than unplugging a cable and plugging it into something else.
Yeah, and if you need to like add something to the room or whatever, you don't have to put a switch in place now because you didn't run an extra cable.
Well, it's just like when I built my office I'm in now. I don't know how big it is, Jeff. What do you think? 12 by 12?
Oh, at least.
What do I got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12 cable drops?
Mr. Overkill. But no, that's the way to do it. That really is the way to do it. If you're going to go in, especially pre-construction, or you're going to go in and run that cable, you only want to do it once in your lifetime. It'd be done. All right, very cool. All right, John, you're up. What do you have for us as far as a tip or story?
I'm recycling a tip. Big firmware update, obviously, with all the wireless excitement we've had recently. And there's another big firmware update for a lot of the Arachnus networking gear that I use, or that a lot of us use. So I'm just recommending that Overseer again, which is the remote monitoring, managing, and updating of all your network gear. So I have about 300 pieces of network gear under my Arachnus Overseer Cloud, and I'm updating firmware by clicking a button.
Nice.
So it's a beautiful thing. And I think that ties into a little bit of our subject matter today. How can we support those clients that are a long way away from us?
Absolutely. And we definitely have the perfect people on the panel to talk about that.
It's a little bit of a recycle, but I fall in love with it more the more that I use it. So
awesome. Hey, for those that haven't tried it, go ahead and try it. There's many ways you can do it very inexpensively, and go ahead and get started and just see what we're talking about as far as the Arachnus gear, the Overseer, and what you can actually do with that equipment.
I second that. I just put my first Arachnus switches in at a new spot, but we've been using the Watt box. But yeah, having a web panel interface where you can just go look at everything and see the status, up, down, update firmware, like get email alerts when something goes away. And it's so far, I'm super happy with the Arachnus switches, and I've always been happy with the Watt box.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, those are nice to have. All right, so I have my tip for this week. It's something I ran into, and John, we kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago. Every computer in my office that's on Windows 10, which are all on Windows 10 Pro, they basically have updated to the latest, greatest Windows update. And as we know, every, I don't know, 6 months, Windows comes down with this humongous update that usually takes a while, goes through several restarts. Well, I was a few versions behind on this personal computer I'm on, and I couldn't figure out why it wasn't grabbing the updates. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So I was dinking around yesterday, and this is kind of crazy for me to do it the day before a show, and I noticed that on the where you can share or how you get the down or the updates from Windows, you can do it personal network. You can do it on the, or it says PCs on my local network and PCs on the internet. And then there's just PCs on my local network. Somehow that was turned on, and I had checked for some reason. And I don't think I did this. I think Windows did it, but PCs on my local network. Well, none of my other PCs are, because that's one of the things I turn off. None of them are sharing the updates. So there was no way for my computer to get the updates. And I wasn't allowing it to get updates on the internet. So I basically blocked it unknowingly. As soon as I shut that off, it was, I think I shut it off Friday. Saturday came up and said, hey, big update. Do you want to restart? It'll take a little while. And I clicked yes. So that leads into my other tip. And for a lot of people that don't know this, and I've heard Mike Smith talk about this on his show, When everybody moved from Windows 8 and Windows 10, if you're on a PC and you're using any type of FireWire device, whether it be a sound card, an audio box, a mixer, or whatever, you're not going to be able to use the Windows 10 FireWire driver that comes in Windows 10. Now, Microsoft, kudos to them, has made a legacy driver, which I've been using since Windows 8. For my mixer and other things that are FireWire. And so you can go to Microsoft, you can download it. It's the 1394 OHCI compliant host controller, and it's got, in parentheses, legacy. Now, the way you have to load this is a little weird because you'll download the file. It's a real quick file. It's like 249 kilobytes. You double click it. It like flashes and goes away. But when you go to your control panel and actually look at the add remove programs, you'll see it in there. But it's not going to do you any good. You need to go to device manager after that. When you go into the device manager, you're going to find your 1394 controller. And what you're going to do is you're going to right click on that file and you're going to update it. And then you have to find where you have the driver on your system, point it to that driver, let it load, and it will allow you to use FireWire. Now, in my latest build, I did not have a native FireWire port on the motherboard that I had. What I had was I had to go and buy an extra, or not an extra, an internal card in order to get the FireWire because my mixer can, the thing with FireWire and mixers is it can record multiple channels very, very well. And that's one of the things I wanted because I'm crazy like that. So that's one of the things I did. But I know there's a lot of people that are supporting different businesses out there and there's weird things that they do. And there's people that might be using FireWire and they go, I don't know why this FireWire is not working. Well, this is one way that you can absolutely get it to work. And I just had to do it twice because when I did the update yesterday and it finished, I came back, I think this morning before I left for work, and there was another addition to that update. So now I am up to the latest Creator's Edition and everything is running fine so far. Now, I will tell you that I did run into an issue, and I think it was my error. But basically, I've never seen on Windows 8 or Windows 10, on my personal machines, the blue screen of death. Well, I did today. Now, normally I would panic, but it was something to do with once I loaded the FireWire driver, and before I restarted my computer, I had shut my mixer off, and it created some sort of error. I don't know why, but I read the error and it was like a Fire Studio error. So not a big deal. It was for a system file. So I went back, reloaded everything and restarted it, turned the mixer on and everything works beautifully. So that's my tip for today.
And I'll add on to that, Jeff, if I can, the service that you want to look at for that is called the Delivery Optimization Service. That's your Windows 10 update service that handles that sharing. So if you want to disable that by script, or you can actually go in and just disable that service totally on your PC, and then you'll just get Windows updates your normal way.
And what's weird is that's normally what I do, but either I heavy-handed it at one point, or there was some sort of update. Because even when you're not getting the major updates, you're still getting regular patch fixes for your operating system. I was getting regular patches all the time, just not the next major update, whatever it was. And I can't even remember all the names of them now. But anyways, yeah. So definitely check that out. All right, before we get started with our main topic, let's go ahead and take a quick break. Our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email SMS alerting, even third-party patch management. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. You also have easy-to-read dashboards, which I thoroughly enjoy. A powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. It also has an executive-style report showing important system metrics, such as health score, software added or removed, hardware changes, and TeamViewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. You can't lose by checking them out. Take advantage of this offer, go to ninjarmm.com/10off. All right, so let's go into the main topic, which is brought to us by none other than Brad Torrey. Awesome job, Brad. All right, so he said, I was just talking to a potential client, and it's another mid-sized restaurant chain. They span three counties, so that could mean a 2-hour drive north or 2 hours south for me. Yeah, I would stick like four forks in my eye before I do that, but whatever. I can't responsibly take on the geographic scope myself, but they'd be a great client at just the right time when I'm feeling the pressure to hire or partner. So what do? Hire remote techs, dispatch as needed, find other companies to partner with, get a time machine, etc. That's good. So I like that. Now,
transporter.
Yeah.
Yep. So walk us through the process, Brad, of what you're feeling when you see this opportunity come up, but you're trying to figure out exactly how it's going to work best for your business, what makes sense without maybe passing it off to somebody else, and how maybe you can partner with somebody, or what are some of your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, mostly this is going to be between like Orange County and San Diego County. So that drive is probably worse than driving up into LA at times. So I just can't do that. Like, I don't mind going down there a few times, but if they need something, I'm not going to be able to get to them. I'll come down, get a room, and I'll see you in the morning, because I'm not going to get there. But I like to kind of handpick my customers, especially when they're going to be a larger part of my business, which these guys would, you know, they have enough locations that they would be an important customer. And I already know the person I'd be working with directly, and a lot about these restaurants, and there's someone I really want to work with. So I'm excited for the opportunity. But yeah, it's going to be more than I can just take on. But I can't hire someone that's based, like, let's say in San Diego. I'm not going to be able to give them the consistent hours that they're going to want. And I can't hire someone here and have them drive down there, because that's the same problem as me. Like, it's going to take them forever to get there, and they're not going to be able to be helpful. There's services that have just kind of like techs on call. You know, you kind of get what you get. It's almost like an organized Craigslist kind of thing. I can't remember the names. I've looked at them before. Those kind of worry me, because you don't know the qualifications of the tech. You've never worked with them before. I have documentation on all the specifics of a network that they would need to work with that. So like, I got to catch them up to speed. I'd almost be faster for me to drive down there. I just have a feeling there's kind of a limit to how much I'm going to get out of that. So then does it come down to, I know someone listening to this show probably, or the kind of person that would listen to this show has a shop down, you know, maybe they have a small operation that's similar to mine, that's near around there. You know, maybe we go, we have lunch, and we see if we can work out a partnership, and we trade hours, or not trade hours, but work out an hourly rate that works out, and kind of call on them when we can. I don't know. I'm like, or just go down and try to open up a branch office and get a bunch of customers and make it worthwhile. But that just seems a bit much to do right off the bat.
So John is probably the perfect person to have on the show to talk about what he does in his business as a single tech. And how do you handle these situations, John, where I know you have a business that branches out to many different areas, and you have to support them. So what are some of the things that you do that makes sense for you to support all of them, no matter where they're at?
Well, first of all, I think you have to look at the type of customer you're going to be supporting. So Bradford, I think you're saying this was a restaurant chain?
I mean, yeah, it's a restaurant chain. So they've got mostly point of sale, PCI compliance. They're going to have the type of point of sale they're using has a server, a Windows server in the office, and then they have a manager PC. They have they have email. They said they have 50 users at various levels. So that might just mean like someone who's kind of a supervisor. That might mean someone who's in marketing, and it might mean restaurant managers, but that's the kind of environment. So,
well, I think a lot of times with point of sale, and especially in a restaurant, if that system goes down, you might have a lot higher service level type of agreement. I'm not talking about something that's signed, but just an anticipation of faster service. Because obviously, if the point of sale is down in the restaurant, and if that restaurant's open from lunch till 2 in the morning, you have a pretty big service window there. that you have to right. service.
And the way I manage that is I don't. I have a current restaurant, you know, group that I work with, and they are predominantly bars. So a couple of them are kind of divey bars. Like they're just the place, the local guys, they open at like 8 o'clock in the morning and they close at 2 a.m. And there's someone sitting at that bar at all those times. So when I first met with them, I said, I will take you guys on, but I'm not going to be on call at 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday night. That's not going to happen. You have to maintain support from the point of sale vendor or a similar company that wants to do that. And they already had that. I just said, you got to keep that. You're not dropping that support because that's kind of specialized software that I'm very familiar with, but I don't know everything about. And I can't be available all those hours. I will die. So that's,
yeah, so that's one a big consideration. You know, and two, if it's not outside the scope of the point of sale, meaning it's your network or something like that, you know, that might come into play. But Jeff, I think you pretty much experienced what I do since you've made a call for me to a mall where I had a point of sale system.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I do partner with a company that's much larger than I am to either cover me while I'm on vacation, or they do have a much larger geographic reach than I do. You know, they have what I would call 50 tier one techs that they call on to do their stuff. So a lot of times they'll cover me. I do have a client over in Chicago that has a satellite office. So I have Paco LeBron on call. So that's a great way to, what Bradford mentioned, you know, obviously on the pod, in the scope of Podnuts. In passing, I've discussed there's a couple guys down in Indiana, which are very close to another satellite office. I've never had any problems down there where I've need to call them, but that would also be a Podnuts member that would be helping me out down there. So I would suggest you try to, you know, if I was going to tackle that and I had the kind of needs that maybe the point of sale system or a restaurant type client, you know, you'd have to make those kind of relationships before I went into that type of thing. So try to set up a trusted person down there already. You know, and my example is I've leveraged Podnuts. You know, Bees helped me down in Florida with actually a mother-in-law. So, I mean, you know, it all depends on how you want to hit that up. But obviously, that was somebody that I could send over. And he had a buddy on that side of the state. So we had somebody that I trusted to go help mom.
Yeah. No, that I got that call from their director of ops. And I think it was Friday afternoon. And I was about to go into the grocery store. And I get the call. I'm like, oh, interesting. I pick it up. And as soon as we got off the phone, the first thing I did was pull up email and shoot an email over to guests at Podnets. Hey, I need to go on the air because hopefully somebody will hear this.
And you know what? Here's where I say a lot of people are worried about competition. And I'm a big believer of there really is no such thing as competition. It's all in your head. So for a lot of people out there, this is a perfect opportunity where people can leverage the people that we know, not only here, but all over the world, people that listen to the show and just want to be helpful in what they do. I mean, the last thing I would want to do is I don't want to do any of John's work, you know, except when he needs an emergency. Hey, you need no problem. I'll go out there. It saves him a couple hours drive where it's only, you know, a half hour for me. So I'm more than happy to do that. And, you know, of course he compensates me accordingly, but,
and I do it for a couple guys too, in my area, that are either on the other side of the state or if, you know, they're solo techs and they're on vacation. And usually it's the kind of thing where it's really easy money. Cause usually what it is, hey, I can't get over there. I shipped a switch to you. You're going to get it in this morning, you know, tomorrow morning. Can you just go plug that in? You know, it's like that easy, you know, 15 minutes of work just to help them out and save them a 2 hour drive or so they don't have to come back from Florida or whatever's happening, you know, doing some triage. And a lot of the times you can work out some sort of, you know, if you're billing out $100 an hour, you can work it out with that guy you trust. Say, hey, I'll just pay you 80. Just give me a little bit to cover some costs and life will be great or something like that.
Yeah, I have I've mentioned it before, but a guy that's he leases and maintains large, you know, multifunction copiers. He calls me out to do their network and driver installations. And I give him a better rate than my normal rate so that he can, you know, he either bills them for it or he just eats it. So we have an arranged rate and I, you know, it's like so easy. It's usually, I bill an hour for it. It takes me 15 minutes and I drive down there, smile and wave, hit some buttons and walk away. And that's fine. It works out well for me. And it's the cost of acquiring and customers and all that marketing and then maintaining the customer relationship. If I'm not doing any of that, then that's fine. I could take a little hit. Perfectly reasonable. I think another, John hinted at it earlier. Another angle that I'm taking is when we go in and set up a network, we have remote support available on every computer that we might ever have to touch. Wattbox is now a mandatory piece of equipment in every rack, every network. So like the last one I just did, I got a 12 outlet Wattbox. Everything in that rack can be remotely monitored and rebooted. Set up all the rules when the internet goes out, give it a minute to recover. If it doesn't come back on, reboot the cable modem. Like, that's so awesome. Cause I get so many calls from these restaurants where if I'd had that Wattbox there, they wouldn't even have called me. They would have panicked and run around for 2 minutes while they couldn't figure out what was going on. And then bam, the internet would have come back up and they would have been fine. And I would have gotten an alert, so I would have known that it happened.
Well, in talking about the Wattbox, when you're looking at things like that, another thing that's really cool about, like, let's say the Arachnus equipment or the Wattbox that they sell, I have a 12 port in my office, a little 10x10 office, which is what I do. So I love it because I can plug my cable modem into it, which is the only thing that I had to buy outside of all my switches and everything else that the cable runs through. And it basically, that port resets every Sunday along with my switches, my router, and they're all sequential. One's maybe at 1 o'clock, one's at 2 o'clock in the morning, one's at 3 o'clock in the morning, one's at 4 o'clock in the morning, but they're all sequential where they go down the list and they restart. And therefore, when I'm in front of my computer, I can't tell you the last time I've had a major problem. It's like everything, I don't worry about going through and having, because let's face it, there are things you have to restart every once in a while. There's no perfect products out there, but having the ability to automate that is awesome where I have to think about it never. So the only time I'm going to have a problem is like when there's a major catastrophe and one of my pieces of equipment is actually down. Then I go, okay, that's down. Let me pull that out and pop another one in. So Brad, now, thinking about setting something up that's far away, I wonder how much of that work you can do remotely where it makes sense. And maybe every once in a while, if you can't get somebody to come out there, you could bite the bullet and head down there for a day or whatever and take care of any major problems that they would have. Would that be worth the time and effort to do that?
Yeah, I'm going to be... So I had an assistant and I'm going to have to hire a new assistant because he decided to go work at a motorcycle shop because.
Well, that's cooler.
It is cooler. It is. He gets his hands dirty. It's making him happy. That's fine. We left on very good terms, but I need to hire a new assistant. As long as I had someone, like if I go to San Diego, now I've got the reverse problem where most of my customers are up here and now there's no one here. So I would need to know that I had someone around to dispatch in either direction. If I had, I wouldn't mind going down there. They have 4 or 5 locations. So I could make that drive worthwhile. And a lot of this project that they're asking about is like setting up, they want to get off of using Dropbox as a server. And they told me they wanted to get off Dropbox as a server. I'm like, well, they didn't use that term, obviously. But they said, we're using Dropbox and we... No, like, oh, you listen to the show. so like that's a remote project. I don't have to physically be anywhere to do something like that. I can remote into any computer. Although I will say I had to walk through with an accountant who's not a computer guy at all. He just knows how to use his computer the way it is. And if anything changes, he doesn't know what he's doing. And he was the one that I had to get on the phone with and have him go through and install remote access to all the computers in the office. And that, to steal Jeff's catchphrase, I wanted to stick a fork in my eye many times. If I'd had him handy, there would have been like 5. that was the worst. That was such a it was like an hour to install full remote access. And I had just given him a shared link to my, you know, I have a public Google Drive folder that I can throw stuff like that in temporarily. Download, click install. That's all you got to do, buddy. Like, come on. Anyway. So, but I'm not, but a lot of times when you're dealing with younger people, that's not a problem. That's like, and in these restaurant groups, there's usually someone who's kind of tech savvy in each place. So I could just have, yeah, I could send out remote access links to everybody and just say, hey, we're going to install this thing here. I don't need to physically go, but I would like one time go down and meet everybody for the first time. That's kind of standard issue what I do. I always want to shake hands with someone at least one time so they know who I am.
I am almost positive that there's somebody around the, you said San Diego area, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In matter of fact, I know that there's multiple people that live around the San Diego area that do listen to the show. So hopefully one of them will hear your call for help and to take an old term.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to, you know, help you out with a situation where, yeah, if you need that emergency, hey, they're down hard and we need somebody on site. A lot of these things though, when we're looking at supporting businesses, even when they're closed, you know, if a server goes down, or a switch goes down, or a router goes down, a lot of times you're not always going to have the replacement equipment right there available that you're just going to be able to, yeah, we'll swap it out today. There's usually a couple day lead time that you've got to have to be able to set that up and make sure that that happens. So I know a lot of people like to play like they're Johnny on the spot, and really they're not, they're just playing that, but we need to have the ability to look at some of these situations and go, yeah, I can support you. Here's what you have to understand. It might not get done that day if you go down, but here's what we're going to do to make it the best way possible where this stuff is running like 99.9% of the time. And yeah, when there's that little hiccup, you're going to have to deal with it, but we're going to do everything we can in our preventative maintenance to make sure that this doesn't happen but once in a blue moon. John, would you agree with that?
You know, it's kind of corny, but that whole ounce of prevention, pound of cure type thing, you know, the quality of equipment you put in, you know, if you can monitor it with Overseer and you see that the Watt Box is rebooting that stuff all the time because it's going offline, you know, you get those hints, pay attention. And maybe on this kind of client, you can have a couple pieces of backup gear. So worst case scenario, you're overnighting something down there or even leave it on site, depending on how expensive, or maybe even an extra POS station that's already ready to roll that they can swap out.
That's an awesome idea.
Well, if they use the support from the vendor, almost everyone uses, like all the big restaurants use one. It's kind of like, may not be the number one POS system, but it's definitely the most universal. And there's a very large dealer that sells and supports that in Southern California. They are based in San Diego, but they cover all the way up to LA. They have, you know, $1,000 a year kind of support plans per location. And if you go on to like their gold tier, they have the systems all ready to roll, just like John's saying. They'll show up same day, swap out your printer if it goes down, swap out your terminal if it goes down. They're kind of specific configurations, so it's difficult to... It's not hard. It would have to be something that I specialized in and made scale if I wanted to be more hands-on on supporting this particular point-of-sale system. Because they intentionally make it difficult to support for outsiders.
Well, and I always had required, even when I was working, whether it was a nonprofit or it was another small business, I always required them to carry whatever support for the software they were using. And I told them right up front that, yes, I understand I'm a tech. Yes, I understand I'm very good at what I do, but I don't know all the pieces of software out there. And even if I know a little bit, it's going to take me longer than it is to pick up the phone, call somebody from support that actually deals with that stuff on a daily basis, and they can get in there, boom, 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 done. And you're moving. It's well worth the, you know, whatever the costs are. back then, this was back in the 90s, or actually not 90s, the 2000s, and it, you know, it might be $600 to support Peachtree for your accounting software. $600 a year, it's well worth it, in my opinion. So I would force that issue on a lot of that stuff. So that makes sense. So really, the stuff you're talking about supporting, Brad, would be more of just the network keeping that up and running.
Yeah, that would be the primary responsibilities. Network up. We're always more of an advisor than anything else anyway. You know, here are your internet options, and this is the equipment we need to install to support. Email support for the users, because there are 50 people with an email address, I believe. PCs up and running, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not really trying to get into supporting the specific point of sale system, and they're not asking for that either. They're gonna continue with that support company. So, I think once we go in and kind of do an assessment and takeover, there won't be a lot of emergencies. I don't have to roll a truck to my current restaurant group very often, unless we're doing an install. So, which we're still kind of onboarding them a year later.
But I think we're always onboarding our clients, because I don't know that they're ever up to 100%. As a matter of fact, I was listening to a show, and I won't mention the show because, quite honestly, I can't understand how somebody would say this, but somebody was talking about in their business, their clients are 100% HIPAA compliant, which I don't believe exists. It's no different than unicorns and leprechauns. They don't exist. So I don't think 100% HIPAA compliance exists either, but there are people out there that believe their customer, to the best of their knowledge, and it's not their fault, but to the best of their knowledge, without things changing, they believe their customers are 100% HIPAA compliant. So I think we're always moving our customers forward, which we should be. We shouldn't let them sit on equipment that's 5 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old. I mean, it just gets to a point of ridiculous. There should always be in a forward momentum to get the best bang for their buck for the IT services that are provided, the equipment they're using, the services they're using. You know, one of the things that we never want to do this, but I know the Quicken software that I use for my personal finances, I can use it for 2 years and will download from my bank and gives me all the information I need, and I can adjust my checkbook and all that kind of stuff. After 2 years, they give me a warning, and they give me about maybe 2 months warning, and they'll tell me, hey, on such and such a date, you're no longer going to be able to automatically download stuff from your bank. So guess what? None of this stuff is going to work, basically. You need to upgrade. So they force me to upgrade every 2 years. I have no choice if I want the software to work the way it's supposed to work. If I want to try to sit there and make it work kind of, sort of, yeah, that's not what I do. I'm the solver of problems. Let me get the problem solved. Let me make your life easier so you can go doing whatever it is you do. And that's kind of the way I deal with that stuff. John?
Have we solved the issue, or have we created more questions?
Well, I think there's many ways that we can definitely go about it. I think Brad's on the right track. Let's find somebody from the community that can step up and say, yeah, I can be your go-to person. And, you know, maybe it's somebody that does this even part-time and they do it off hours, which there's a lot of benefit to doing this stuff off hours. I know a lot of people will look at the part-time business owners, and I know Paco LeBron was talking on Podnets Daily last week or so about this, and looking at us as, you know, I don't know, a leper or something. And the reality is, we just do things at a different time, is what he was saying. And it's true. We do things at a different time off hours, which if you look at a lot of the MSPs, oh, I just threw up. A lot of the MSPs out there, they will actually have a crew that works in the off hours, whether it's late at night, on the weekends. So that stuff is going on. It's just nobody, you don't hear a whole lot of people talking about it. So I think there's a lot of benefits to using different types of people to get things done. And I think as a community, we can all kind of work together to make it better for all of us.
Yeah, my last assistant was a much more of a morning person than I am. So that actually worked out nicely. So all my customers know, and I've gotten them past, because morning people tend to, like you said, look down on evening, like people that are more night people. You know, like you call me at 9 a.m. Yeah, I'm just waking up. And yes, it's because I was working until like whatever, you know. So it's not because I'm a bum. I didn't wake and bake and just like decide to stay in bed. Like I was working all night, man. So yeah, that's now my customers are used to that. And they go like, oh, did we just wake you up? And it's not because they think I'm a bum. It's because they know I was working on their stuff. But there's definitely advantages to having those multiple different shift oriented people, like day shift oriented people, night shift oriented people that you can call on, and you're not making somebody work. I don't like making people work outside of, not necessarily that you have to keep everyone in their comfort zone, but you kind of want people in their optimal environments. So if I'm tired, I could be tired all day, 3 p.m. kicks, I'm on it. Like I'm awake. My brain finally just like kicks in. And that's when most people start getting sleepy. They're sitting in their office and 3 p.m. hits and they're about to like go hit their fifth cup of coffee.
Get that right.
I need the morning people.
So, John, going back to what we were talking about, I know with your business, and because I've been with you, where we might have gone to a weekday conference for a couple days, and we'll be going out to the Chicago area, and I've walked in, and we've set up workstations, just kind of throwing them in, setting them up. You got the remote service already on there, so you can go back, and when you're in your hotel room, you can kind of set it up later and do what you need to do. So, a lot of times, you'll take time and make a trip out of going to different places, and sometimes maybe you'll make it a little bit fun when you're doing that too.
Absolutely. I just did that this weekend. Thursday morning I left, went to Indiana, swung up through Illinois, went up to North Chicago, met actually with Paco, spent a day with him going over some stuff, and then over the weekend I met with an old Marine Corps buddy and then headed home this morning. So yes, boom.
Business and pleasure all at one time. So that's definitely one way to look at stuff like that too.
Vacation with a write-off.
There you go.
Mileage, hotel, yes.
Get to visit people. All right. So, Brad, is there anything else that you were thinking about as far as how to make this better for you, or is some questions that were coming up in your mind of things you might have to deal with down the road that you're not sure exactly what you're going to do?
Well, especially John, but have you guys ever used the services where you sign up and you basically post an alert, a bulletin board for texts that are, you know, hey, there's a project coming up. I need someone right now or I need someone tomorrow. And it's just kind of a one-time job. I can't remember the name of the site that I actually signed up and like got all into it, but I never hired anyone out of it. But you know what I'm talking about?
Well, no, because, you know, you said bulletin boards, and I'm thinking like 1980, but, you know.
Oh, well, you know, I'm old. I may not look it, but.
No, I'm sure there's a bunch of services out there. Because I know a lot of techs will actually use some of these other services where they will get work from periodically to fill in the times when the regular part of their business maybe is a little slow, or, you know, they might do printer jobs for XYZ company or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I don't know of any services that are out there, but obviously you found some.
Yeah, I found one that was big. And we were actually looking to pick up work, but most of the offers were kind of not worth it. It was a little bit of a drive. It was a total of like $40. You know, maybe it was easy work, like installing a Wi-Fi access point or whatever, but like I'm not going to drive to a next county over to install a Wi-Fi access point for $40, even in my infancy when I didn't have, I mean, that was just, that'd have been like an all day job to make $40. That would barely cover my gas money. Like it's stupid. So we didn't pick up very many, any jobs from it actually. So now I can't remember, but now I'm on the other side of it where I'm trying to use it to pick up techs, and knowing that I might be able to make it worth someone's while to actually pick up a job. I'm scrolling through my old accounts and see if I can find it.
Well, what about your favorite thing of using things like Craigslist?
Hey, it works out once.
It could work out again. I'm not belittling Craigslist whatsoever.
It could. That's the thing. Craigslist, there's definitely quality people on Craigslist. There's also a lot of people that aren't going to fit. So, but I might, you know, throw that out there. I just figured reaching out to the Podnest community first would be better than just hitting up Yelp and Craigslist, which I can do. I'll probably still consider that too, depending on what I, you know, because I need to know something soon because I got to give them a proposal.
Well, I think that, yeah, Craigslist can be one of those things where, you know, 90% of the people are cray cray, but the other, you might find that diamond in the rough. Oh, man. So, all right. Well, I'm going to put this out. Go ahead and give your email where people can contact you to let you know that they can maybe possibly give you a hand or at least start a dialogue with you.
Yeah, definitely hit me up if you're in LA, Orange County, or San Diego County and you're interested in talking about anything like what we're talking about. My email is Brad, B-R-A-D, at ttcscomputerservices.com. And also, I do have some people that chat with me on Google Plus, like through Hangouts or whatever, at the same email address.
Very cool. All right. So definitely, if you've got the bandwidth to be able to help with that, definitely give him a call and see if you can work something out. And, you know, especially if it's on an emergency basis, I don't ever mind putting down what I'm doing and helping somebody out when I can. All right, let's go ahead and take another quick break before we get into the next section. I want to let you guys know that you haven't heard this in a long time, but we just got some information that D7X, the third generation of the D7 product line, is now officially available as an update for all D7.2 subscribers. So make sure if you are a D7.2 subscriber or you want to check it out, you can definitely do that. But go ahead and look at the whole underneath is basically rewritten. Initial releases do not change the familiar D7.2 user interface, but most any functionality or functional behavior. But D7X is more than meets the eye with a new code base under the hood that runs faster and is more functional in almost all cases. There's updates and improvements can be now pushed out faster, more frequently, and there are tons in the lineup. Most importantly, the release of D7X means a return to regular updates for D7.2 subscribers. And we wish to encourage all users to step up and submit your ideas for improvements and additions to the product. Go to foolishit.com/D7X for more info. So definitely check that out. It's been a while since we've heard from Nick Shaw and the crew over there, but Nick's always working behind the scenes. Even when you don't hear him, he is definitely working and pulling that stuff together. So definitely check it out. And if you're a D7.2 subscriber, make sure you get that update and play around with it. All right, let's answer some emails, take some phone calls. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. And our first email. All right. Hello from Ireland. Hope is all is good in the hood. Just wondering what was the name of the glue you spoke about. And it is Sugru. It's S-U-G-R-U. And I got this idea from John Dubinsky. He let me know about it. And I've used it several times to fix those piece of junk plastic laptops that apparently everybody is letting their customers buy. Just kidding. Customers go out and do stupid things on their own. I get it. But anyway, Sugru can sometimes save your butt when you're doing power jack replacements. It will hold it in place. It also makes it very rubberized. So it gives you a little bit of give, which is good. Instead of going against a hard plastic It's very fairly inexpensive. It's not really that expensive. You can get it on Amazon, and I'm sure that John is working ferociously to find the links for the show notes.
I'm typing away, Jeffrey.
So, unfortunately, the week we talked about it, he wasn't here. And so, therefore, we had no show notes. So, everybody that loves the show notes, definitely send John a shout-out and let him know how much you appreciate all the links that he puts together for the show notes. Because I do none of it. He does all of it. So thank you, John.
It's actually pretty incredible stuff.
Yes.
I mean, you can use it for crafting, for not that I'm a crafter, but I mean, if you hit their webpage, they got like 1,000 ideas.
It's kind of like, it's almost like a silly putty in its original form, right? And you can form it into whatever you want, and then it holds that shape. It semi-hardens and sticks. But you can also, depending on the amount, you can peel this stuff back off too, to where if you actually had to get to something, you could do that.
Yeah, it comes in a little packet, maybe size of a wet white packet.
Yep.
And it's like moldable glue is the best way to talk about it. But it never totally gets hard like a glue. It's always got a little bit of give. So you can even use it as a bumper for something, like a door bumper, or you could even use it for feet on the bottom of a laptop or a Switch.
That's a great idea. John, how many times have you had a customer's laptop and you're setting it down, you're working on it, or Brad, and you're looking at this laptop and it's like it's sitting on an angle and you're like, why is this thing sitting on an angle? And you flip it upside down and you find out that one or two of the rubber feet are missing. So this would be perfect for that. Because here's the thing. I've always gone through old stock to try to find something that will fit back in those slots. Or I've even cut a rubber out and actually glued it to where the foot is supposed to go. That's because it just irritates me. But this would be a perfect product. You could actually mold it, put it in the same shape, let it dry, and boom, you're done. I like it.
And it's, you know, non-toxic as far as I know, children safe, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I'd eat it, but.
Oh, I have. It's perfectly fine.
Okay, great.
It's okay. You know, it's, speaking of, okay, I'm going to go down a little rabbit trail because we're at work and we have all our chemicals, oils, and different things like that actually have a tox number from Ford Motor Company that says this can be in the building, blah, blah, blah. Here's the toxicity of it. Here's all the things on it. So we have this light oil that comes in a spray bottle and it says non-toxic. And basically I can't remember exactly what it said, but it basically said something to the effect of it can be ingested. So me being me, one day I'm sitting there and I go, oh, that's interesting. So I turned the sprayer around and sprayed it in my mouth and everybody's looking at me like, what's wrong with you?
How was it?
It was fine. I'm kinda still like here.
Popcorn butter at the movie theater?
Yeah, you know, it tasted like oil. That's what it tasted like. But if I saw the things that I breathe on a daily basis coming out of my facility, it really doesn't matter. I'm getting way more bad things just from the air than I am in oil. All right. Let's move on to our second email. It says, hi, Jeff, longtime listener, first time writer from Argentina. Woohoo! Yeah, worldwide, man. All right, I ran into a couple people outside the country. That's awesome. I ran into a similar two-factor issue when I recently changed my smartphone and discovered the best thing ever. So let me give a little backstory on this. I was talking about I used to use Google Authenticator until I almost locked myself out of accounts when my phone stopped working and I had to replace my phone and I didn't have Google Authenticator loaded on anything else. I thought it was on my tablet, but it wasn't. It says LastPass Authenticator is the same as Google Authenticator with one huge advantage. It can back up to your LastPass account. You should be using a password manager anyhow. It works wonders and I now know I can change or update my device and never have to worry about two-factor settings. What's more, for sites or systems that force me to use security questions, I also use LastPass, and this is key. This is awesome. I have it generate very long random passwords and attach them as a note to the site. Not even I know the answers to the questions, but I have them available if and when necessary. Even offline, I log in once to the LastPass app on my phone, and then the whole vault is available in offline mode. Thanks for the shows, and Matthias. So P.S., my father had a PC repair business back in the 90s where I learned a lot of what I know about PCs, but I am a Linux sysadmin / developer that listens to your shows to keep up to date and reminisce. That's awesome, Matthias. Appreciate that. And yes, LastPass is awesome for that. And what he's talking about for the questions is whenever you ask these security questions of what was your car growing up, or where did you live when you were 5 years old, or whatever, all these, what school did you go to? A lot of people will answer these questions with real answers. Well, for most of us, especially on the internet, it's not hard to find those answers out. So a lot of people can do social engineering to breaking your account just with a little bit of information. So if you're using this for security questions, if you're using LastPass or a password manager for security questions, this is the best way to do it. And you can put in the LastPass account underneath that login. There's a note section, and you can put that in, and that's secured in your LastPass vault, which is perfect. So if you ever have to go there, I put notes in there all the time. Matter of fact, different passwords and stuff I have to remember for other people, like within my family, when it's a similar type site, I put those notes and things in there so that whenever they have a problem, I can go back and find those passwords and different things that they need. So I love LastPass. It's definitely a go-to. Now, I didn't use the authenticator.
Here's a shout out to two other apps that you can use to do the same thing if you're not a LastPass user are Authy, A-U-T-H-Y, which is free, or Authenticator Plus. Both of those back up your two-factor stuff.
Awesome. Now, John, have you used any of these, or are you still using like Google Authenticator?
No, I use Authy.
Brad, you?
I use LastPass. And I use it exactly the way you're describing. And I've been using LastPass since like the first year it was out. I'm trying to remember where was I working when I started using LastPass, and it was like a long time ago. And I've never had any issues with it, and it just keeps getting better. So
absolutely, yeah. And the only reason I didn't use the LastPass authenticator was because I wasn't thinking about it as a backup service that it's backing all that stuff up, so I can log in from anywhere as long as I have my master password, which is key. With Google Authenticator, I had to be, for some reason, you couldn't just log into the app. I think when I had to have the app loaded with the links into whatever I was trying to dual authenticate. So, but I'm going to go back through, and because I went back and started using text messages, and I would use the text messages because I knew, didn't matter what phone, my phone number is the same, I'm going to get this text message no matter what. But I think I'm going to go back and start changing those to the LastPass authenticator. I think it's a good idea. All right. Let's go ahead and go into a third email. Hello, y'all at Podnuts. Yes, I am from the South. I have a Windows 10 desktop that I've been trying to get Windows 10 updated on, and it keeps getting stuck at 87%. And it freezes, and I have to do a hard shutdown. Sometime it will do a restore, and then I can get into Windows. Then it starts over again. Oh, the update loop. I did a delete of the Windows download update and re-downloaded it, and no joy. I have tested the hardware, and they all pass. I have also used a different hard drive, and that did not work. Thanks for your help. Robert's Computer Service, LLC. Robert Eiler. Thank you for the email, Robert. And so Robert and I had a back and forth. And so I said, well, you might want to do a fresh install of Windows 10, which he wrote me back and basically said he did. And then the last email I got, he said he was going to re-download the OS because I thought that maybe the OS that he downloaded might have been corrupted and maybe that was causing an issue. He says he has not re-downloaded it, but he thinks it's basically showed up as might be a hardware issue now. He said, I did have a hardware scan, including hard drive, and it all passed. I'm assuming he was using the diagnostic scans on the particular laptop that it was. Says, I'm now getting beep codes on post and taking a long time for it to do a post. From what I can find on the beep code is that it is the power supply, or maybe this might have been a desktop. Need to test to see if that is it. I will let you know. What other things can you check for when you're having a computer that is basically not updating to a certain version for whatever reason?
It definitely sounded, as you were reading it, for me, I was thinking hardware. So you've either got a bad RAM slot, a bad RAM chip, or hard drive. Those are the two that I would go to first. It sounds like you already tried hard drive.
Yes.
But I, even if like the Dell opt, you know, the Dell troubleshooter or any other troubleshooter passes a hard drive or RAM, they can't. That's like, if you get a bad response, then yeah, there's probably something wrong with it. The smart data is telling you that it's bad. But if you get a pass on a hard drive or RAM, that doesn't mean anything because it has to test every sector. It could be one spot, one little section of RAM that's bad. And every time Windows tries to write to it, that's the time it fails. So if they tested the first, you know, 20,000 bits and those all pass and you get to the 20,001 and that one's bad, then you're going to start having random weird stuff like this. So I'd go storage of some sort.
Yeah, the one thing you can do with because most of the manufacturers are using the same software, PC Doctor, which is written for a lot of the OEMs, HP, Dell, etc. And so what you can do is when you go and do a regular diagnostic, which takes on average about 16 minutes, it will tell you, do you want to spend another 30 minutes? And it will go through every sector in the RAM. And it will actually, so that you can get a deeper look and make sure that there's not that one area. Because here's the way hard drives and RAM works, and they're very smart in how the firmware is written. They basically are smart enough most of the time to be able to shut certain parts of them down as they're dying. So if a portion of the RAM is actually dying, then, or it's been overwritten X amount of times, a lot of times it can shut that area down. Same thing on a hard drive. It'll basically cut that stuff off. But if it's getting to the point, and usually that's a telltale sign where when it starts doing that and you get it, you know, X amount error count, you need to go back in and go, we need to replace this regardless. But it sounds like he's tried the hard drive. I don't know about the RAM. And you made a good point, Brad. The RAM slot, a lot of times you have to pull the RAM out, and there's usually only two slots in a laptop, maybe two to four slots in a desktop. You need to pull the RAM out and actually try it in different slots. Maybe just use one stick and then swap that stick for the other stick, or maybe if you have in your supply a good known stick, and shove it into RAM slots and see if you get those same type of errors.
You know, and I would always suggest maybe grabbing a second opinion. So you ran the Dell diagnostics from the BIOS, that doesn't hit anything. Maybe run the Windows memory diag, because they're going to hit it in different ways. You can do the Windows memory diag, you know, remotely as well. So you could reboot that and then check the logs.
Yeah, and also, Windows memory diagnostics is going to have different things already like loaded. Part of the operating system is going to be loaded in the RAM, so you are looking at it in a completely different way than a pre-boot environment. So that's good.
It's good. Any other things that you guys can think of? Because yeah, I think you're on it. It sounding more and more like it might be hardware of some sort.
I just think I don't envy the process of troubleshooting that, because it's not just like failing to boot, which would be easy to diagnose. It's getting all the way through a long, painful process and then failing. So that just kind of, I, my heart goes out to you.
That makes for a bad week.
Yep.
The other thing too is a lot of times when you're doing this troubleshooting, yeah, if you're starting to get beep codes and you look it up and it's whatever, let's say it's a power supply, you should always have one of those on hand, even a cheap one that you can just plug in the main. You don't have to plug everything into the power supply necessarily. Matter of fact, back in the day when I was doing a lot more desktops, my diagnostic process was to pull predominantly every cable out, boot it up, see if I get in a BIOS. If I get in a BIOS, okay, now I'm going to hook the hard drive up. Okay, that works. Now I'm going to, you know, put the next stick of RAM in or whatever. But I would pull most of the things out of there and then try to dial it down to get to whatever that problem might be. Nowadays, it's kind of like, yeah, if you've got a proper beep code and it tells you that it's this, I won't even pull the power supply out. I'll just unplug it, and I'll have a power supply sitting off to the side, plug it in, plug that into the wall, and it works fine. And then I'll go, okay, that was my problem. Then I can take the process of pulling out the power supply and doing whatever I need to do, swapping it out and all that kind of stuff. It's just these small little things will save you a lot of time versus taking that screwdriver out every time and pulling this thing apart. All right. Let's see. So hopefully, Robert, hopefully that helps you out, and definitely let us know how it turns out, because awaiting to see if any of us was close.
Well, yeah, I want to know so that when I run into that problem, I don't have to do all the work.
There you go. Yep. I just want the solution, man. All right. Let's see. So let's go into another email. This says, hi, thank you for the awesome job you're doing to help the IT tech community. No problem. My 11-inch Dell Inspiron 3000 keyboard suddenly stopped responding. I have uninstalled it and reinstalled the drivers. I have even done a full factory reset of the machine, but only got worse because the wireless external keyboard, which I was using, it no longer works either. I'm a beginner tech with an A+ and now studying for Network Plus. What can I do and how can you help me? Thank you and best regards, Wilfred. All right. So, what's your guys' diagnostic on the whole keyboard thing?
Get a new computer.
Just kidding. Go right for the gusto.
Yeah, just, I don't know.
John, wait a minute. John, never mind. I do all your laptop work anyways. So,
yeah, speaking of that, I got a big power jack I'll be sending to you. And let's not talk about replacing keyboards. We'll just keep that between us.
Oh. Yeah. The only time I screw up is going to be on John's, right? Yeah, it's awesome.
No, and let's keep that in mind, my personal laptop.
Wasn't that a business class? Dell should be ashamed with how thin they made those connectors. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And I thought you had a gentle touch.
Okay. Listen, what happens in a hotel room stays in a hotel room, my friend. All right. So anyways, as far as the keyboard, my first thought is the keyboard's bad. This happens all the time. When a keyboard starts to fail or one key starts to fail or whatever, keyboards are fairly easy to replace. You can get one either on eBay or Amazon for usually under $20. And you can go ahead and basically a couple screws on the bottom is going to be able to pop that thing out, put a new one in, put the ribbon cable in, and you're done. And that's probably going to fix the problem most of the time. If it's an actual port where you're plugging the ribbon cable into on the motherboard, that's a whole nother issue. But most of the time, when it stops working or is just not working correctly, I usually replace the keyboard and it goes away. Now, why your wireless one stopped working, I'm not sure. You know, that probably just died of old age too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd be amazed at how many related, but seemingly related, but completely coincidental things will happen at the same time when you're troubleshooting that just completely throw you off. I keep a wired USB keyboard and mouse in my car all the time because I don't want to have to troubleshoot wireless. Like, okay, plug it in. Does it work? Because it's weird that they would both fail. Cause there's not like a central keyboard management module. I think it just says keyboard driver. So if all keyboards were to fail, that'd be weird. I don't really even know what that would mean.
Yeah. And you can have multiple, I guess it would run all under the same driver pretty much. The only thing that would be different is if you had whatever manufacturer's software downloaded for that particular external keyboard, if it was a Logitech or maybe for central managing or something like that.
They all basically use the same HID driver, the HID USB driver, though?
I think so. But, you know, depending on what's plugged into it, I've seen where there's like maybe 7 iterations of that HID driver versus sometimes there's only 2 or 3. And I, to be honest, I'm not that smart. I don't know why. So maybe somebody smarter than me can explain why that is. But I have gone away from, on my personal computer because I'm a gamer, wireless, and went back to wired, which I enjoy that much more. Now, on a lot of the other computers, for this one example, I will use a wireless keyboard with a little trackpad on it from Logitech. And I think this is the K400R. Wonderful keyboard as far as being able to plug it in. It's got the unifying dongle, which means I can also connect a mouse to one dongle in the machine, which makes it beautiful. So this is on my Intel Nook for taking phone calls, actually, my secondary computer. So you know, I got screens and keyboards, and I'm not as crazy as Brad with six screens. I've only got three.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
I do have to say my screens are bigger than his, but anyways,
yeah, it's not the California sun making Brad tan.
So hopefully that helps. And yeah, continue on with learning and figuring out, you know, what's going wrong with the equipment, Wilfred. So hopefully you can let us know, you know, how that turns out. All right. And I'm going to do this because Brad's on this show. So we're going to take this other email because this is near and dear to Brad's heart. Maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. So I'm sure he does. Says, hi, Jeff. Uh-oh. I was curious if you and the guys on the show have any advice regarding moving my business out of state. I'm treating it basically like I have almost to start over, but I at least carry 3 years of clients this time when I started the business. I'm just curious if there's any way to leverage my current 3 years in business to help create brand awareness in a whole new area. Basically, the plan is to move from California to Nevada in 2018. Craigslist has been such a great source of clients in the LA, Orange County area of California, so I've started to lightly do ads in Nevada. But I'm not sure if it will be enough out there. Vegas seems to be looking into esports, so I will be looking into ways to be the local brand for custom gaming systems. While gaming is part of the real goal, it is more workstation builds as those clients see these systems as tools that make them money. Any tips and advice would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Anthony. That's Anthony Remus from Remus Computer Solutions, Brad's very good friend and computer maker.
Oh, no, your builder's moving?
Sniff, yeah.
Wait, you lost your tech and now you're losing your builder?
Yeah, my world's coming to just falling apart.
Oh, long distance hug, man, jeez.
Yeah, and Anthony is a good friend. We go grab coffee, not as often as we'd like, but... yeah, it's going to be, I'm going to be finding reasons to head out to Vegas and just, you know, visit the guy. And it's going to be a good thing for them. But it's, yeah, I know it's hard on him. I mean, moving's hard on anyone. So yeah, he's going to be missed. And anyway, as far as any advice, and we've been talking about, Anthony and I've obviously been talking about this. I didn't know he sent in this email. As soon as you said California to Nevada, I was like, oh, Jeff, you got to give me a heads up, man. I'm going to cry on the air. No, I mean, he's already shipped out some PCs. So like to Alaska, he even sent one. So he doesn't have to be necessarily local. It just was a really nice advantage. That he was, you know, people would be searching for someone in Huntington Beach or in Orange County, and then he would come up that way. He could, like, since he's using Craigslist, Craigslist is regional. He could still be running his ads in multiple markets on Craigslist. I think they allow that. Craigslist has weird rules. I haven't been in there for a while. I don't remember, but he could be doing that. I don't know. It's hard. He just needs to update his website too and just be like, hey, we service these areas. I know that we have some customers that are going to continue using him. And we'll just find a way to ship, or one of us can make a drive to pick it up kind of thing, and just make a point of just mostly to, like John was saying earlier, about if you've got to travel for business, make it a fun trip, you know, like, oh, well, Anthony sold a computer for one of my customers. I'll go meet him in Vegas and we'll hang out.
Right off for Vegas. You got a maid.
Yeah, exactly. So
what about like a month before he goes out, you know, drop the bomb on wherever his local area is, if he's trying to do that. I'm not sure what he chases as far as business clients, but, you know, some sort of direct mail piece in a limited small range, you know, an introductory type thing. I don't know, a couple other businesses, maybe hitting up copier guys. That's a great way to do that. I work for a copier company like Bradford does too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there might be some way where he might be able to, you know, announce his arrival.
The other thing too that I was thinking about was, I'm just thinking about if you take a heavy computer, and I've shipped a few computers around that are basically home built, you're looking at what? Maybe pretty much anywhere in the United States, maybe $100 to send it, maybe a little bit more than that with some extra insurance, et cetera, et cetera. To me, to build that into a price for a custom built machine, especially what he's building, it seems like he could probably go more national than maybe he is right now and not just deal with the local area. But I agree with you. I think updating the website and even having some blurb on there, you know, coming to this area soon and maybe start getting the SEO Google juice going for that particular area. And maybe even, you know, depending on how close he's getting to making that move and that transition, start getting some, you know, keywords and different things in there that are pointing him. So when people are looking up in that area, maybe they're calling him before he's moved and he can already start that dialogue ahead of time and say, yeah, I'm going to be here, blah, blah, blah. But to be honest with you, for what he does, I would try my best to take that national and start shipping these things all over, because you've attested, I've seen them. They're such a high quality build and high quality piece of equipment, and it's doing the job. As a matter of fact, I think the workstation he builds, every one of our business owners should actually have one of those, whether they do CAD or any other stupid thing. Doesn't matter. They could, you know, check Excel spreadsheets. It will work a lot better.
Yeah, and he has the dumbed down version for that. Like, he's got the accountant edition, and we have a couple of those with people using them. And yeah, she's like the CPA. She has it's a high paced environment. The owner will come in and want to have like rapid fire question and answer time, and she needs to be able to access that info quickly. And this isn't the $3,000 model. It's a little about $1,000 for just the tower, but she was willing to spend that money because after she got to demo it, she was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get so much more work done and be so much less stressed sitting there trying to answer these questions. And so yeah, he should. I know he has a couple challenges with shipping, as far as once you get out of his immediate area, now warranty support becomes a little bit harder. But I mean, so does every PC manufacturer has to deal with that, because none of them are local, right? Like, they all, you just got to figure that out.
Here's the thing. You need to look at the parts you're using, how often they fail. And I'm going to say that probably most parts are not. I mean, other than the stupid motherboard I got from a brand name company whom I love still to this day, I've had one fail within a year's time. I've got machines that are 15 plus years old from that same manufacturer. And the stuff I bought afterwards, it just works most of the time. Now, yeah, every once in a while, you're probably going to have to eat a little cost as far as doing the warranty work. But here's the other thing. Talking about what we were talking about today, this is also where you can maybe get somebody that is on a, you know, in that area that could maybe do some on-the-ground support for you, and be able to go in and be able to diagnose the thing, maybe pull a part out, send it back to you, where you're not shipping the whole computer back and being able to take care of that warranty type stuff that way.
Yeah. This is an RMA for one of Anthony's PCs, GTX 1080 Ti.
I'm jealous. That doesn't work. I was going to say, if it works, then send it to me.
No, that's the one that's going back.
Darn.
But so that already was the problem solved, right? I went to the customer site and I pulled this card out.
Right.
And then he's just going to send me the RMA info and I'm going to send it in. So, I mean, these are good problems to have, or terrible problems to have, however you look at it, but they have solutions. We'll figure it out. So,
absolutely. And don't be afraid to make that leap, because yes, is there going to be some pain points? Absolutely. Is it going to be worthwhile in the end? Absolutely. And the reason I say that is because it's all on your outlook and what you want to do in your business. And your life is what you make of it. And there's good, bad, in different times. But really, if you're pushing forward with a goal and something in mind, that's definitely the way to go. Go ahead and take that leap and, you know, start spreading your wings a little bit, start getting out there and making it more lucrative for you. And just think about the custom products that are going to put a humongous smile on people's faces. I know I'd be giddy just to get a system from him. And I build these things, but I can tell you right now, even though I do a good job, his are a thing of beauty. They really are. So night and day difference. So good job on that, Anthony. And good luck in your transition. And sorry, Brad. all good things, but you know, sometimes your kids just got to grow up and leave the nest. And
I was talking earlier. I had my best friend since high school just moved to Hawaii, like at the beginning of this year. Everybody's moving away, man. What's going on?
Well, it's the state you live in, but besides that. Oh, man. All right. Let's see. I think that was the last email for the show. We're getting around that time. So let's go ahead and let's see. Brad, if you'd like to give one parting thought and let people know where they could find you again so they can get in contact with you and maybe be able to help you out in the San Diego or LA area.
Something I thought of that was helping me out a lot this week is get real good at that smile and nod and just to kind of breathe for a second. It's gonna definitely got me out of probably a situation a day every day this week. Just smile, nod, think for a second, then respond, and you know, everybody thinks you're happy to be listening to their problems.
Absolutely.
And I once again, Brad at ttcscomputerservices.com, and welcome to hear from anyone that's got anything they can offer. So
awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And Mr. John Dubinsky, you want to give people one parting thought and let people know where they can find you at?
Hey, great topic, Brad. Mavengroup.net, and we'll see everybody next Sunday.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it. All right, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com, or you can leave a voicemail, which we will play on the air, and you can use our call-in number, which is 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnuts.com, or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.